It's a straight up podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Straight Up Podcast, a show about international affairs with a focus on East Asia and, of course, Taiwan. I'm your host, Chris Gorin, recording here in Taipei, Taiwan. Today, I have another topic that mostly concerns life in Asia, and especially in Taiwan, the ownership and use of motorcycles. Yes, as I discovered from this conversation, by some metrics, Taiwan has the highest level of motorcycle ownership in the world, and the majority of the top 10 motorcycle-owning countries are in Asia. It's definitely something that you notice when living here in Taiwan, as motorcycles not only cover the roads, but also the sidewalks. The huge number of parked motorcycles in Taiwan adds to the chaotic and claustrophobic feeling of walking in cities like Taipei. But is it all bad? Are there any benefits to having so many people on motorcycles? And how did it all get to be this way in the first place? Well, today on the show, I have a specialist on this topic to answer some of these questions. Dr. Bingyu Cho is a research fellow at the Japan Transport and Tourism Research Institute. He has a PhD in city and regional planning from the University of Pennsylvania, has worked as a government consultant on transportation issues, and also publishes articles on these topics in Taiwanese media. This episode is a sort of follow-up to an interview I conducted with Dr. Zheng Zuroi from National Chung Gong University, where we discussed road safety and pedestrian issues in Taiwan. If you'd like to hear that conversation, the link is in the show notes. And I should say, it was actually Dr. Bingyu Cho who recommended I speak with and put me in touch with Dr. Chung, so I'm doubly thankful to him for that. In this interview, we discussed rates of motorcycle ownership across the world, the pros and cons of motorcycle-heavy societies, the relationship between national income level and motorcycle ownership, the link between public transit and motorcycles, their impact on pedestrians, and many other topics. So now I bring you Dr. Bingyu Cho. Okay, I am here with Bingyu Cho, and I usually give a pre-recorded intro to most of these episodes, but I also like to give my guests a chance to introduce themselves and their own background. So tell our listeners a little bit about your background, what you're doing now, and how you came to this topic of motorcycle ownership.
Sure. My name is Bingyu Cho, and I am now a research fellow at the Japan Transport and Tourism Research Institute. So I'm based in Tokyo, Japan. And before coming to Japan, I worked in Taiwan for 6 years in consultancy and government. And then I went to the US and I received my PhD in city and regional planning with a focus on transportation. And my PhD dissertation looks at the relationship between motorcycle ownership and use and the built environment characteristics in Taipei and how the expansion of the metro system in Greater Taipei has affected motorcycle use. So that's how I came to this topic.
Great. Yeah. And just really quick, you say that the relationship between motorcycle ownership and the built environment.
Yeah.
What is defined for our listeners, built environment? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, built environment is not an everyday term that we use, but it simply means everything you see that physically it exists in a city, which can include population density, and also the presence of public transportation, and also like job density and the road networks, how dense roads or streets are in a certain city, and all of the other things that you can think of as physical features of a city.
Right. And yeah, of course, the subject of motorcycle ownership in Taiwan is an important one because I believe Taiwan has one of the highest rates of motorcycle ownership per capita in the world, if I'm not mistaken, right?
It is actually the highest rate in the world.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's actually a good place for us to start. Let's talk a little bit about, the sort of general situation in motorcycle ownership around the world. Which regions and countries have the highest rates of ownership? And, what factors in various countries sort of impact the rate of motorcycle ownership?
Sure. When we look at motorcycle ownership, the figure I'm using is the number of motorcycles registered per 1,000 inhabitants in a country. Certainly you can look at such figures by on a country-by-country basis, but if you want to grasp a large picture of the world, then we can look at the world by regions, right? So I find that obviously Asia is the most motorcycle-dependent region of the world, followed by Latin America and Europe. So that's the large picture. So to give you a more concrete sense, if you look at the top 10 countries that are motorcycle heavy in the world, you will find that 8 out of the top 10 are in Asia. Mm. So let me read you the list of the top 10. So the top 10 are Taiwan, Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia, Uruguay, Thailand, Greece, Sri Lanka, Laos, and Cambodia. So except for Uruguay and Greece, all the other 8 are in Asia. So you can see how Asia really is on top of the list.
Yeah, and it also seems to be dominated by Southeast Asian countries.
Exactly, yeah.
Which kind of makes Taiwan slightly an outlier in Asia in that way. And I mean, I guess it depends on if you define Taiwan as Southeast Asian or not.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of like the border.
Yeah, I mean, geographically, Taiwan is not too far away from Southeast Asia. And we do have part of our population that maybe shares the same DNA with people in Southeast Asia. But economically, Taiwan is indeed an outlier when compared to these countries.
Sure. And I also feel like just really quick, we should interject that when we say motorcycles, we're talking about scooters, Vespas, any motorized two-wheel vehicle, basically.
Yeah.
Because in the United States where I'm from, I think motorcycle and scooter, you know, kind of have these like separate mental images.
Right.
But when we are talking about motorcycles, we're talking about all of those categories.
Yeah, exactly. So we're talking about all motorized two-wheelers. And I think generally in the world, people use the word motorcycles the most. And in a few countries like Vietnam, they tend to use motorbike. And in
right.
Japan, I think they sometimes use the word too. But I think weirdly in Taiwan, people are so used to the word scooter. While scooter in other parts of the world are easily associated with kick scooters. So, it is a minor issue, but I just want to highlight something I noticed when I read the academic literature.
Yeah. So, you know, among these top 10 countries, what are the factors that seem to be shared among these countries, or are there any, you know, what seems to indicate whether or not a country might tend towards having high levels of motorcycle ownership?
Yeah, sure. So among these all top 10 countries, I have to admit that I'm not very familiar with Uruguay because it's in Latin America, which is
right.
Quite far. And Greece, I've been there, and I know that Greece is not the country with the highest income in the region, right? And the climate there tend to be warm. So I think that's probably part of the reasons why people use motorcycles a lot. But if you look at all the other Asian countries that are on the top of the list, what you have noticed is that they are all countries of middle income, which means that they don't have the level of income which are recognized as a developed country. Well, Taiwan has that kind of income level. So that's why I just said that Taiwan is probably an outlier in this list.
Yeah, I mean, is it safe to say that that Taiwan has the highest GDP per capita on that list?
Yeah, that's correct.
And yet it's also the highest level of motorcycle ownership.
Yeah, and another common feature, I think, among these top 10 countries is that most of them have high population density. So if you look at Vietnam, Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia, and even Sri Lanka, Laos, and Cambodia, they're all quite dense in terms of population. And of course, you know, Taiwan is one of the densest countries in the world. If you consider all the countries whose population is over 8 million people, then the densest country in the world will be Bangladesh, and the second densest is Taiwan. So yeah, to sum up, income and population density are two common features shared by most of the countries in the top 10 list.
Right, and also warm weather.
Yeah, warm weather might play a role as well.
It's interesting that, you know, countries like Korea and Japan don't make the list in that way. The sort of Northeast Asian economies, which, you know, are at a high level of development now, but certainly hasn't always been that way. I mean, especially I think of South Korea, you know, several decades ago, they were still sort of in a developing economy. Do we have any, you know, is it the weather there that might have led to fewer people buying motorcycles? Or do we have any idea why motorcycle ownership is lower in those countries?
Yeah, sure. Let me start by giving you some context. So the top 10 list or the, you know, the regional rankings that I just gave you is based on motorcycles per 1,000 people around the time of 2016, right? So around that time, the number for Taiwan is 587, which was the highest in the world. Meanwhile, the number for Japan is about 80. So it's much, much lower than Taiwan. And the number for South Korea is around 40. So it's even lower. Yeah, but I think Chris, you just raised a good point then that why is that the case when Taiwan has a similar income level with South Korea or Japan, but the motorcycle ownership rate is so different. I think you could say that climate play a role here, but I would like to raise another point, which is the history of investment in public transportation. So we all know that Japan started their like metro system and all the rail transport systems quite early, right? The first line of the Tokyo Metro was inaugurated in the 1920s, so that's pretty early. But if you compare, if you then compare South Korea and Taiwan, you also notice that it's quite different in the history of their metro systems. So let me give you a figure. So you know, the Taipei Metro was not open until 1996, right? So it's about 30 years old now. While the first metro system that South Korea has, which is the Seoul Metro, was inaugurated as early as 1974. And what's interesting that when the two metro system was open, the per capita GDP for South Korea back in 1974 was pretty low. It was only about $600. So that kind of income level was still too low for people to afford motorcycles. So a lot of people start use the metro. On the other hand, when Taipei Metro was born in 1996, the per capita GDP of Taiwan that year was already as high as $14,000. So motorcycles in the late 90s was already generally affordable means of transport. So I would say that it is because that urban rail transit system came quite late in Taiwan, but it came much earlier in South Korea. You see the difference between motorcycle ownership growth between the two countries.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about motorcycles as a method of transportation. You know, what are the advantages of being a motorcycle rider as a form of transportation? And what are some of the sort of downsides of high levels of motorcycle ownership for any given society?
Yeah. Everything has its pros and cons, and of course, motorcycles as well. So let's start with the pros. So the good things about motorcycles is that if you are a person of a relatively low income, then a motorcycle can give you an affordable means of transport if you cannot or if you don't want to use the public transport or a private car or a bicycle or walking to commute to your work, right? So, motorcycle is much smaller than a car, which means that it doesn't consume a lot of fuel. And also, if the roads get congested, you have higher mobility in the traffic, right? Because you're smaller. You can maneuver through the traffic. And also, it's much easier for you to park than a car, right? So all these characteristics saves the users money and time. And if you consider things beyond the individual level, you can also think of motorcycles in a way that if the portion of motorcycles in road traffic is higher, then it makes the use of road space more efficient, right? Because if you look at that issue from perspective of the number of people that per square meters of road space can serve, then if you have a road traffic that is largely composed of motorcycles instead of cars, then the same area of road space can serve more people than a pure car traffic. So probably we can say that if a city is mostly motorcycles in terms of traffic, then it's less likely to have road congestion. So I think the above are the good things about motorcycle traffic. But if you want to look at the cons, which are the bad things, then motorcycles, I think, produce harm in terms of health and the environment, not only for its own users, but for everyone in the city. So I want to start by talking about health. We all know that if you use a motorcycle, then you have a higher chance of death than you use a car or the bus or the metro, right? So it's itself a risky means of transport. So it's, I wouldn't say it's a perfect means of travel for even its own users. And also, if you compare a fossil fuel motorcycle with a fossil fuel car, emissions. So we all know that some toxic gases can be emitted by vehicles who use fossil fuel. So if you compare fossil fuel motorcycles with fossil fuel cars, in terms of the emission per kilometer travel, then the motorcycle emits more than a car.
Really? I was always under the impression that well, perhaps because I was thinking that, you know, because motorcycles are more fuel efficient, that meant fewer emissions per kilometer, just as it, because you use less fuel. Well, what leads them to have higher emissions than per kilometer than a car?
Well, so I'm citing a paper to say this. So maybe it's not the total emission amount of gases, but it's just that some substances in the emission are higher.
And is that just because there's less filtering going on in the exhaust system?
I think so. I think maybe it's the mechanical design that makes the difference. So, for example, the carbon oxide is higher on the motorcycle side. And also the particulate matter is also higher on that side.
Interesting. So, I mean, and I'm not sure if this is something that you know much about, but hypothetically, would it be possible just through, you know, greater filtering hardware, I guess, on the bikes to help reduce this number? Or is it just kind of intrinsic to motorcycle design that it will be, we will release more of these toxic materials?
Yeah, I'm really not familiar with the technology, but I think if motorcycles can go electric, then that helps a lot.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that would be interesting to see, you know, how much that really cuts down on these toxic materials.
Yeah.
Also, just going back really quick to your point about the danger of driving a motorcycle.
Yeah.
You know, in a previous episode with Zheng Zuroi, we discussed about that Taiwan has a very high level per capita of traffic deaths. Mm-hmm. And I have to imagine that part of the reason for that is the high levels of motorcycle ownership. I don't know anyone, you know, I think every person in Taiwan either has been in a motorcycle accident or knows someone who has been in a motorcycle accident. It just seems like a fact of life. If you ride a motorcycle for, you know, even just a few years, you're almost guaranteed to be in some kind of accident. The severity could be minor, but it just seems so frequent. And I've seen it. I've personally witnessed it myself several times on the street. So Taiwan is exceptional in one way in terms of motorcycle ownership, which is that it has a much higher level of income per capita than the other countries with high levels of motorcycle ownership. But does this tell us anything about how we should think about Taiwan's level of development? I mean, like, is this level of motorcycle ownership somehow help you determine what level of income a country is at? Or is Taiwan just exceptional because of its sort of unique history of developing metro systems later than other countries?
Well, let me start with talking about the relationship between income level and motorcycle ownership from the theoretical point of view, although I will try to make it short. So a Japanese economist in 2014, well, his name is Shuhei Nishitateno. So he, in 2014, has released a theory which is called the motorcycle cuteness curve, which means that, which says that the motorcycle ownership rate of a country is correlated with its economic development level, but it's not a simple relationship of all negative or all positive. It's actually that when a country evolves from a low-income country to a middle-income country, motorcycle ownership rate goes higher all the way. But when the country then evolves from a middle-income country to a high-income country, then the motorcycle ownership rate is supposed to go down. And such a turning point was roughly between $5,000 and $7,000 as per capita GDP. So Taiwan has long ago passed that level of income. Right, like I said, in 1996, the per capita income. The per capita income of Taiwan was already almost $14,000, but because we didn't have a urban rail transit system until then, the motorcycle ownership rate was already high back then, and it actually has been increasing all the way until now.
So at that rate, you know, that means 6 out of 10 people in Taiwan have a motorcycle.
Yeah, right. So to give you a brief conclusion of what I said above, I think what affects motorcycle ownership level of a country include at least three things. One is the income level, one is the population density, and the other could be the history of the presence of metro system, or more generally, urban rail, urban mass rapid transit in that country.
So I'm just curious, because, you know, in this theoretical Kuznets curve, which Taiwan has seemed to defy, and I know that you have also done some of your own research showing that building more metro accessibility tends to reduce the number of people using motorcycles, at least the ones who live near station metro stations. But you're also saying that even as Taiwan's metro system expanded, so too did motorcycle ownership, that it continued to expand alongside the metro, the growth of the metro system. So I'm just wondering, do we have any sense of why that was the case in Taiwan?
I think ownership of vehicles doesn't go down easily. I mean, when people own a vehicle, they really find it convenient, they really find it useful, so it's difficult to have them give it up, right? And their family members tend to buy more. And also, I think another reason is that although Taiwan, or at least Taipei, have an increasingly extensive network of metro, still, in a lot of places, you see a disconnect between the metro stations and the surrounding environment in terms of whether it's easy or not for people who get off the metro to walk or to cycle to their destinations. So if it's so difficult to walk or cycle after you take the metro, then people will think it's still more convenient to own a motorcycle to get from point A to point B instead of using the public transport.
Yeah. Can I ask you to speculate on something a little bit less scientific here, which is about culture? Because I'm wondering, with such high levels of motorcycle ownership, does it kind of become like a cultural feature in a way? You know, like in America, Americans love their cars.
Yeah.
You know, even if there's an extensive metro system in a given city, I think the culture of car ownership is sort of deeply ingrained in the American psyche as part of the American experience, you know? And I'm wondering if there is a sort of corollary to that in Taiwan, where, you know, as you're growing up, you know, maybe when you're a teenager and you first get your, when you're old enough to get your motorcycle license, if that's like sort of part of the coming of age experience in Taiwan. I don't know if there's anything to this, but I'm sort of just throwing it out there if you feel like there's anything to that.
I agree that culture does play a role here, although it's something that is hard to quantify, right? So I cannot talk about it in a general sense, but in my personal experiences, I never own motorcycles in my life because my father...
You're one of the four out of 10 people that didn't own one.
Yeah. Because my own father insists that I should not have one because it's dangerous. Mm. Also, when I was in college in Taiwan, I spent a year abroad as an exchange student. So I went to France. And also, I did my master's degree in the UK. So when I came back, I have kind of become... accustomed to the lifestyle of using only public transportation, walking and cycling, so that prevents me from buying a motorcycle in my whole life so far. Well, when I look at people who has never lived abroad, in Taiwan, they will use motorcycle to move around, even if it's just a short distance. And I saw that both in Taipei and a southern city called Jiayi, where, you know, Jiayi is not very famous for public transport. they don't have a metro, and Taipei do has a metro and have generally more sidewalks, but still people will use a motorcycle to go from their home to a convenience store nearby, which is maybe just 200 meters, but they still prefer motorcycling than walking. Maybe it's culture. Yeah,
I was just going to make one a quick statement for the listeners for who may not know Taiwanese cities well, but Taipei is sort of exceptional in the extent of its metro system, which is quite large and extensive. But most other cities in Taiwan, even the big cities, tend to either not have metros or have very limited number of metro lines. Yeah. So that may play a role here as well. Although Taipei City, even with the most extensive metro, still sees sort of an incredible number of motorcycles on the street. I think it's one of those features of Taiwan that one notices when they visit for the first time is just how many scooters are driving around.
Yeah, exactly.
We talked about in a previous episode, one other issue that I've noticed living in Taiwan that motorcycle ownership really affects is the issue of parking.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, with all these scooters, you know, 6 out of 10 people own one, they have to put them somewhere. And most people are living in apartment buildings, which may not have parking garages.
Right.
And so most of this parking is out on the street and in many cases on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the issue of parking and how these high levels of motorcycle ownership affects it. Because I think one of the unique features of motorcycle parking versus other types of car parking is that a lot of it is done on the sidewalk rather than in the street.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So I want to go a little bit back to the downsides of motorcycle traffic that I just mentioned. The last point I wanted to make is that because the motorcycles are so small compared to a car, it is much easier for them to go into pedestrian space and maybe park there. So it makes the quality of our public space worse because of that. Chris, like you said, motorcycles in Taiwan have long been allowed to be parked on sidewalks. But recently, some local governments in Taiwan finally realized that it's wrong to do this. So they started to remove motorcycle parking spaces from the surface of sidewalks. That is a good thing to happen?
Sure, yeah. No, I hope there's more of that because my own personal experience is that I don't see any change. I mean, my daily experience is that I'm walking on the sidewalk or a chilo, which is essentially a sidewalk, that is only wide enough for one person to fit through because the rest of the space is taken up completely by motorcycles. And also, you know, every time there's a typhoon, you know, I come out onto the street and it's just like a domino, you know, of tipped over motorcycles because there are very few spots, at least in the areas that I frequent, where there are not motorcycles on the sidewalk. It's difficult to understate the ubiquity of motorcycles in the sidewalk.
Absolutely. So I think I think whether motorcycles are allowed to park on sidewalks or not, I think the real solution to the problem of motorcycles occupying so much of the pedestrian realm in Taiwan is that we should really switch the parking policy, more specifically, parking fee from day-based to hour-based parking charge so that the turnout rate of each parking space can be higher because now people are charged by the hour, not by day, right? So I think that can effectively reduce the number of motorcycles you see on the streets. And also, it will also make it easier for those motorcyclists who are really in need to be able to find an empty parking space when they need one.
Yeah, and you know, this, I guess this goes to a more general issue about what to do about parking, you know, not just for motorcycles, but for cars. But I'm kind of wondering, one thing that I've noticed in Taiwan is that there aren't that many parking garages. In other words, like big buildings, multi-floor structures,
right,
only for parking cars. You don't generally see those very often. And I'm kind of wondering why, because I feel like it would be a great way to make money in Taiwan, considering how great the need is for parking. But do you have any sense about why it's so rare to see parking garages?
I actually don't know. And but what I can say based on what I have understood about parking garages or any designated parking area is that even you build or plan such areas or buildings for people to park, as long as people are allowed to park the motorcycles in the sidewalks or the chilo, the arcade, that is as close to their home, then they will prefer parking like that instead of parking in the so-called legal areas or buildings.
Yeah, I think one of these sort of cultural things is that people expect, I think, that they should be able to park their motorcycle more or less wherever they want and for free.
Right.
But I you know, I wonder if there could be a built-in sort of parking fee in your yearly vehicle registration that could go to building public parking structures. And I definitely would like to see more enforcement of illegal parking, you know, of citations for illegal parking, because that's also, I see it
right
regularly, and I don't think most of these people are getting cited.
Yeah. Speaking of parking fee collection, so nowadays in Taiwan, or at least Taipei, you see those people in some sort of uniform. They walk on the streets and put parking tickets on on the windshield of cars, and I don't see any reasons why they cannot do it with the motorcycles. So if we can apply, if we can extend that system from cars to motorcycles, then I think the collection of parking fees can be more effective as a way to manage people's use of parking spaces.
Yeah, we call this job creation, or at least it would be.
Exactly.
Although it's creation of the job that will make you the most hated person in your neighborhood. Which is unfortunate, but it is kind of true.
Yeah.
So changing gears just a little bit, I'm a little bit curious about if gender plays a role at all in motorcycle ownership. I mean, for example, are there fewer female motorcycle drivers than males, or, you know, how is there any issues of gender involved with high levels of motorcycle ownership?
Yeah, in terms of gender, I cannot say that whether gender plays a role in ownership, because my research looks at ownership at the household level. But if you look at not ownership, but use of motorcycles, then if you are a male person, that means if you're a man rather than a woman, then you have a higher chance to choose the motorcycle when you're facing an alternative mode of transportation, including the buses, the metro, and the bicycle. So I would say that, yes, a man is indeed more inclined to use a motorcycle than a woman, based on my research.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about, I think it's safe to say that Taiwan kind of needs to reduce its level of motorcycle ownership, and expand public transit, or at least come up with infrastructure that more easily integrates such high levels of ownership into the streets. You know, what is the government doing that now? I mean, what policies has the government begun to enact that are trying to help alleviate the sort of congestion, parking, or perhaps reduce the levels of motorcycle ownership in Taiwan?
Well, if you consider the mass rapid transit or the metro in Taipei as one of those policies to reduce motorcycle use, then yes, that policy has started since 1996. But more recently, we do see some other policy changes that seems to be aimed at reducing motorcycle dependency. For example, in 2009, in Taipei, the public bike share system, which is called U-Bike, was inaugurated, so which could play a role in reducing motorcycle use.
Yeah, I will just say I love U-Bike. Personally, I use it every single day. And I think that Taipei in particular is an eminently bikeable city because it's almost completely flat.
Right.
So I feel like it's a perfect city to have high levels of bicycle use.
Yeah.
Anyway, just wanted to interject.
Yeah, agree. And also in 2019, which is just a few years ago, motorcycle parking charge has been kind of reformed in Taipei City, and the city wants to do that in four phases, which is that they divide the whole city into four classes of areas. For example, the first class is those areas that are within a certain distance from metro stations, and then the second class may be those areas that are within major commercial areas. And as far as I remember, they have started to apply the by-hour parking charge to these four classes of areas in phases. So that's a good change. And also one thing I want to mention is that in 2015, moped sharing services were approved in Taipei City. So moped sharing is a kind of vehicle sharing services where you have something like a motorcycle, maybe in hundreds, put on all the streets of the city, and people can use their apps on their smartphones and to get these vehicles and use them.
Yeah, it's similar to some bike sharing services that I know other countries have, where you open your app, there's a map of all of the available scooters in your area, and you can basically just at any time go and pick up one of these scooters and drop it off wherever you need to go, and then you just get charged a fee more or less based on the distance and the time that you're on the scooter.
Right.
And I guess that could help reduce the number of people buying scooters instead. I would say, though, that I personally have had a bad experience with these.
Oh.
With this, where I went to a national park, which is right next to the city, Yangmingshan.
Right.
And what happened was, after we parked the bike, because it was, I guess, technically outside the service area of the bike,
right,
we couldn't restart it.
Oh.
So we were stuck out there and calling the company, and there was no way for them to turn the bike back on. They had to come and bring a tow truck and pick up the motorcycle and bring it back to the city.
Yeah.
So it does have its limits, is my only point about that.
Right. It's a new service, so there must be a lot of problems they are yet to fix.
So that's what Taiwan has done so far. I'm wondering, do you have any recommendations about what else they could be doing to help solve this problem?
Sure. If I am an expert who is to give advice to the government, I would say one is to continue the parking reform that we just mentioned, and to really switch all the parking fees of motorcycles to the by-hour basis. And also, they should really remove all the parking spaces from the sidewalks, so that motorcyclists will be more careful when they're considering whether and how much to use motorcycles. That's my number one advice. My number two advice is to really to have better integration between the metro station and maybe the bus stop and the sidewalk and the bicycle facilities. And at the same time, to have sidewalks and maybe bicycle rental stations or bicycle lanes even, to be extended to more minor streets and even valleys than they are now. So that, in transportation studies, we talk about the idea of first mile or last mile. So if you really make it easier for people to walk or to use a bicycle to get from their home to the closest metro station, then the need of motorcycles will be reduced. That's my second point. My third and last point is that it's more of a long-term thing, but every major city should really use urban planning measures to concentrate populations and jobs to its metro days, its metro stations, especially those metro stations not in the downtown area, but in the outskirts of the city. Because based on my research, I find that if people are living farther from the downtown, it's more likely in that they will own motorcycles. So if you put more, if you concentrate population and jobs to these suburban metro stations, people distance of commutes will be shortened because of that. And that will also help reduce the use amount of motorcycles.
Can I go back for 1 second to your recommendation about just banning more or less outright parking on the sidewalk with motorcycles? Mm-hmm. Because I think one issue we sort of talked about before, but many of what most people would consider sidewaks in a normal city is actually in Taiwan what we call chilo, which is basically a covered veranda that is technically the private property of the owner of the building that is adjacent to that.
Right.
So basically it's used as a sidewalk because that's where everyone has to walk, but it's privately owned. So I'm wondering, I mean, could the government, does it have the authority to ban motorcycle parking in those chilos since they are sort of private property?
Yeah, it's very tricky because veranda or chilo in Taiwan, it's I would say semi-public, semi-private space. So I don't think the government thinks it has full legitimacy to ban outright motorcycle parking from these spaces, which are part of buildings.
Right. So that's why I'm thinking, like, you know, because I would love for them to take your recommendation to just sort of outright ban parking on the sidewalk. But when I think this idea of sidewalk is the problem here, because a lot of what we call sidewalks is actually chilo, is sort of, this public private space where maybe the government couldn't enforce any rules like that. So I'm not sure what to do about that, but.
Well, perhaps, yeah. Well, maybe perhaps not outright ban, but financial incentives like taxation could change that.
So now we've talked a bit about the challenges of a society with high levels of motorcycle ownership, especially Taiwan being number one. But I'm wondering, is there anything that Taiwan could do to make good use of its high levels of motorcycle ownership? Or is there any way to turn that into some kind of positive image for the rest of the world? Or is there something the world could learn from Taiwan and this feature of its society?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question. And, you know, the highest motorcycle ownership rate in the world can really help Taiwan's national branding effort, if you want. So I think in terms of national branding, now Taiwan's position in the world is either the flashpoint between great powers or the key role it plays in the global supply chain in terms of the semiconductor manufacturing. But motorcycle and Taiwan's policy experiences toward this kind of transport mode can really offer lessons to other countries who are facing the same phenomenon. So I would suggest that Taiwan's government and academia and maybe consulting firms that are specialized in transportation and also electric vehicle makers, moped sharing operators and NGOs that are interested in transportation should really cooperate. And they should really co-work under the great umbrella of motorcycle policy and make it an international effort. For example, Taiwan can really periodically host international conferences on this topic, or to have international exhibitions on such topic, and even to fund the publication of related books in English, or to even Taiwan should really be proactive in inviting government officials and professionals and even scholars from those high motorcycle ownership rate countries or cities to visit Taiwan, to learn from our experiences toward motorcycle policies. And lastly, I think Taiwan can do is to even create such English taught programs, degree programs or even executive courses at universities, and to have students from those countries to study in Taiwan, to explore this topic and to learn from the experience of Taiwan. If this idea can happen, then I think the industries and the government and even the academia in Taiwan can all benefit from the role that Taiwan plays in the motorcycle world.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting idea. And I think, it would be interesting to see if there was a lot of government sort of like grants, scholarships and so forth to focus on transportation research and, you know, maybe even in particular motorcycle ownership and use.
Right.
In terms of transport, to sort of bring the intellectual wealth of the world to Taiwan to focus on this issue, you know, maybe they could come up with some solutions that other countries may need down the road. As you were speaking, I actually thought of another issue that we haven't talked about yet, which is with such high levels of motorcycle ownership, what about manufacturing? I mean, is Taiwan, you know, one of the world's largest producers of motorcycles, or are they mostly imported? I mean, where are these motorcycles coming from?
Taiwan does has its own motorcycle brands, and as far as I know, those brands have also expanded their reach to other countries, such as countries in Southeast Asia. But I guess on the global scale, the biggest manufacturing country of motorcycles is maybe Japan or China in today's world. So I wouldn't say that Taiwan has a particular strength in motorcycle manufacturing, but I do think its policy experience can be a leader in the world.
Sure, yeah, it's too bad that they haven't been able to leverage this motorcycle use into motorcycle production, because I feel like that, at least then they could have some strengths there.
Right.
But it's also interesting to wonder why not, you know, why is it not a bigger industry? Because I know that it's one of the biggest producers, if not the biggest producer of bicycles. So it seems like it maybe it's not such a natural transition into motorcycles, but I was just curious about that. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us and giving us some really important insights into this issue, which is not totally unique to Taiwan, but that Taiwan is experiencing in a unique way, and for giving us a more complete picture about transportation in Taiwan. Thank you so much for your time, and I'd love to have you back sometime.
Sure. It's my great pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
All right. Until next time, see ya.
See you. It's a Straight Up Podcast.